Saluton from BA. This is a Rorschach multilateral update from the 6th of January 2026, a summary of what's going down in the world's major multilateral institutions. We are back after a short break for the festive season, so first of all, Happy New Year and thank you for listening to the show. Kicking off this episode with big news, on Saturday the 3rd, after US forces captured Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, the European Union's top diplomat urged everyone to stick to international law and urged calm. She noted that the EU still says that Maduro lacks legitimacy and wants a peaceful transition, but stressed that any solution has to respect global legal norms. European leaders said they are watching the situation closely and have been in touch with US officials. On the same day, the UN Secretary General publicly criticized the US attacks in Venezuela. He said the attacks set a dangerous precedent under international law and urged respect for the UN Charter. He's worried that rules on the use of force and respect for countries' sovereignty weren't followed. The US says its measures are justified, but details about how it plans to manage Venezuela going forward remain unclear. On a related note, an opinion piece by Hal Brands, written in English and published on Saturday the 3rd on the American Enterprise Institute think tank, argued that while a US operation that ousted Venezuela's president looks like a big win in Washington, it could give China unexpected advantages strategically and rhetorically. The author suggests Beijing might use this moment to portray the US as a dominant power that is willing to impose its will abroad, but not in a justified way. By portraying the US in an aggressive way, China can shape narratives about global leadership and influence and make itself look better, giving the country more room to promote its interests in regions like Latin America and beyond. In some other news, on Monday, the 29th of December, Putin signed a new law that stops Russian courts from enforcing criminal rulings issued by foreign or international courts unless Russia was directly involved or had agreed to the court's authority. This means that decisions from places like the International Criminal Court or tribunals set up over the Ukraine war can be dismissed outright inside Russia. Officials say it protects Russian sovereignty, while critics argue it could block accountability for alleged wrongdoing by Russian leaders and military figures on the global stage. Putin's approach to international law is selective and instrumental, shaped by strategic interests rather than consistent legal commitment. Putin has emphasized state sovereignty and non-interference when opposing Western interventions, while simultaneously justifying Russian actions through alternative legal narratives. Previous conflicts were each framed by Putin as lawful responses to security threats or self-determination claims. Since we mentioned the war in Ukraine on Tuesday the 30th of December, the US ambassador to NATO questioned Russia's assertion that Ukrainian drones struck near President Putin's residence, saying there's no solid evidence linking Kyiv to the incident. The NATO envoy called that narrative into doubt and stressed the need for verified information. The ambassador also cautioned allies against amplifying unconfirmed allegations, noting that disinformation has become a recurring feature of the conflict and can undermine diplomatic channels, public trust, and efforts to prevent further military escalation. On Monday, the 29th, the UN Secretary General issued a New Year's message urging world leaders to rethink their priorities and put people and the planet ahead of war and political posturing. He pointed to widespread suffering, with millions living in conflict zones and many needing aid, and highlighted how military spending far outpaces funding for development and humanitarian needs. He said the global community has the resources to make big improvements if leaders choose to shift how money is used, and called for more investment in human well-being and peace in 2026. Still on news from the United Nations, on Tuesday the 30th of December, the UN General Assembly approved a regular budget of about $3.5 billion US dollars for the organization's work in 2026, after weeks of negotiations tied to a major reform push called UNAT. The budget will support the UN's core areas like peace and security, development, and human rights, and ends up slightly higher than the Secretary General's recommendation, but lower than last year's overall funding level. Meanwhile, in the Middle East, on Wednesday, the 31st of December, the UN Development Programme called on Israeli authorities to drop plans to bar many international aid organizations from working in the occupied Palestinian territories. They argued these groups provide nearly $1 billion in yearly assistance and are vital to delivering food, medical help, shelter, and other support, especially as winter worsens conditions in Gaza. The statement said restricting access could seriously set back gains made under the ceasefire and put vulnerable people at greater risk. On a related note, on Saturday the 3rd, UNICEF reported that humanitarian channels in the Gaza Strip are under serious strain as winter storms batter makeshift shelters and damaged homes. Heavy rain and cold have made life harder for displaced families, slowing the delivery of food, medical supplies, and other essentials. Aid workers are struggling to reach many communities cut off by flooding and mud, and the worsening weather has added urgency to calls for sustained and reliable access so people can stay safe through the winter months. Next up, on Sunday, the 4th, delegates from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC, said the group is likely to keep oil production levels unchanged for the next few months, even with political tensions flaring in several key countries. The decision reflects an earlier agreement among major producers to pause planned output increases, citing weaker seasonal demand and a market that looks adequately supplied for now. While internal disagreements and global uncertainty remain in the background, the group appears focused on avoiding sudden shifts and sticking with a steady approach as 2026 gets underway. Geopolitical turmoil has often influenced production decisions by OPEC, as member states often want to manage price volatility and supply risks. For instance, the Arab-Israeli War in 1973 led several members to restrict output and exports, contributing to a severe global energy crisis. During the Gulf War, disruptions in Iraq and Kuwait pushed other producers, particularly Saudi Arabia, to raise production to calm markets. The 2011 conflict in Libya also reduced supply, prompting adjustments by other members to prevent sharp price spikes. In Asia, on Tuesday the 30th of December, Malaysia's Prime Minister said leaders of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations will take a careful look at how things unfold in Myanmar after the first part of its disputed election wrapped up over the weekend. On to Africa, on Tuesday the 30th of December, the chair of the African Union Commission publicly welcomed a peace initiative from Sudan's transitional government that was shared with the UN Security Council. He said the plan's political, humanitarian, and security elements could be a solid base for ending fighting, protecting civilians, and bringing stability back to the country. He stressed the importance of broad dialogue led by the Sudanese people and backed by regional and international partners, and highlighted the need for inclusive elections that reflect citizens' aspirations for a peaceful and unified future. And to wrap up this edition, some environmental news. On Monday, the 29th of December, a United Nations Environment Programme report highlighted 4 places where people are already rethinking how they interact with nature as part of a broader global assessment. In India, indigenous communities have blended wildlife protection with jobs in ecotourism. China has built a formal electronics recycling industry to cut toxic waste and create work. The Seychelles turned debt into marine protection zones. And farmers across parts of Africa are reviving degraded land with age-old soil methods that boost food production while restoring ecosystems. And that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. We want to start this new year on the right foot, so send us some feedback to improve our shows. See you next week.